All right, so we'll start just a prayer real quick. Father God, thank you for giving me this opportunity to try to impart some kernels of truth. Please let them guide my tongue to let it be from you and not just not from me. And pray all this in your son Jesus' name. Amen. So what I often do every time, every once in a while, like I don't teach the kids very often, but every once in a while when I'm asked to do that, I like to take it back to basic. So I decided to do that today, especially with a lot of the news about what's going on in the schools. I decided to take a look at the Ten Commandments. And so we have them in the Old Testament in two different places. So the initial, where Moses brought them down from the mountain, was in Exodus chapter 20. And then we have them again, slightly worded a little bit different, but pretty much the same in Deuteronomy chapter 5, starting in verse 6. So I was going to just kind of read and then look at some other scriptures surrounding them. So if we start in Deuteronomy 5, verse 6, it says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery, and you shall have no other gods before me. So pretty much I think everybody knows that one. So only worship God. And it's not just enough to only have one God, but you must, you know, you should love him. So I really like it because if you switch the chapter and verse around from 5:6 to 6:5, you get kind of an elaboration of that commandment. So if we go to 6:5, it says, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. Okay, and we see this verse repeated by Jesus a few times. So if we look in the New Testament and we go to Matthew chapter 22, y'all might remember this story about the greatest commandments. Can everybody hear me okay? All right. I'm pretty loud in the beginning, so I'm like... so if we go to Matthew chapter 22 and verse 37... the greatest commandment. So, hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together, one of them an expert in the law, and tested him with this question, Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? And Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. So he left out strength, but there's other places in the Bible where he says strength as well. So we see that, obviously, is a very important commandment. So not only having no other gods, but also loving God above all things. He says something similar in Mark chapter 12, verse 30. I won't read that one because it's very similar to the one in Matthew. It has the same spirit. So there's that one. And then if we move on to the second commandment, it kind of, in a way, reiterates the first one. So it says, you should not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above, or in earth beneath, or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. All right, so a lot of people associate the idol worship, making images with like making statues or things of that, or maybe worshiping things in nature like materialism. But it could also be you know, more modern things that don't necessarily look like statues, but are material, like money. A lot of people make a lot of idol worship out of money, maybe we're not really realizing it, but placing too much importance on money, and not realizing that you need to rely on God. And then if you do that, then everything you need should come to you. But you know, I've had problems with that in the morning. Like still to this day, I think maybe I make an idol out of money. And then there's other things that could be seemingly good, but maybe we turn them into idols. You know, getting addicted to drugs could be another thing. Substance abuse. You look at them as counterfeit gods. Right, and then moving on, also kind of expanding on the first one, is using the Lord's name in vain. So on, I think I'm in verse 11. Next time I'll wear my glasses, sorry. So you shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. And a lot of profanity, a lot of the more modern profanity is taking the Lord's name in vain, like the GD. Even they say there's some origins in the UK where they say bloody, and then the AG double hockey sticks after. They say that comes from maybe some of the origins could revolve around the blood of Christ. So that could be a misusing God's name. But yeah, so if you use God's name, it should be with respect. And a lot of people in more modern times try to use the euphemisms around using the Lord's name in vain. Like I think back to the Dennis the Menace, Mr. Wilson, when he would you know, saying things like, "Yeah, get gravy out for pizza." So he's basically cheating, trying to use the Lord's name in vain without actually doing it. So the intent, I think, is the important thing. So want to respect God's name. And then the last one, we've got one that's kind of seems really alien, but if we look in verse 12, it says, "Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath day to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor any ox, your donkey, or your animals, nor the alien within your gates, so that your manservants and maidservants may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day." So, I don't know. Do any of us really do that anymore? I find it very challenging. One of the churches I was a member of, the leader, the priest, the pastor, was very he went out of his way to try to keep a Sabbath day and not do any work, but. Maybe that was easier to define in the olden days because there wasn't electricity or anything. So, like, if you're using electricity, like Orthodox Jews, they'll make sure they're not using any electricity, even on their Sabbath. But how do you really practice that? So I think it's obviously taken very, very seriously and by the ancients, because if you look at one example, they actually put somebody to death for violating the Sabbath. So, in Numbers, so if we take a trip back one book in the Torah, and we go to Numbers chapter 15, verses 32 through 36. The Sabbath breaker put to death. All right, so... So as the Israelites were in the desert, a man was found gathering wood on the Sabbath day. And those who found him gathering wood brought him to Moses and Aaron and the whole assembly. And they kept him in custody because it was not clear what should be done with him. And then the Lord said to Moses, "The man must die. The whole assembly must stone him outside the camp." So the assembly took him outside the camp and stoned him to death as the Lord had commanded Moses. All right, so that seems kind of harsh. I think part of what's missing is maybe because we have a few thousand years of separation, so maybe we're missing a lot of context. It does say they were in the desert. Resources were severely limited, so I think maybe the problem was that he was doing work and accumulating resources when nobody's permitted to. So he's kind of cheating. He's cheating people and stealing resources. He's holding back from God by not honoring the Sabbath day, and he's also stealing from his community. I think that may have been more of the reason why they were told to put him to death. I kind of liken it to more in modern times, because I'm a finance and accounting guy, I'm a CPA. So I think of it like insider trading with the stock market. Okay, so if you work for a company that's on the stock market and you have access to information that nobody else does, you can't trade in the market on that because you're cheating and you're stealing. You're basically stealing from everyone who doesn't have that information. So I kind of... use that as my analogy for it. I don't want to die for if somebody does that. I mean, I want him to go to jail and have to pay it all back and everything, but I don't know if I want him to be killed. But so how do we do that today? How do we practice the Sabbath? I mean, is there really any way to escape the work that's being done for us or I think the most important thing is just to spend a lot of time, a significant part of your week, in prayer, community, to get some semblance of keeping a Sabbath day. But I realize there's a lot of nuance. I don't have like the answer to it, but I think we should at least try to do some form of Sabbath practice in modern times. And coming to church is part of that. I mean, that's a part of our Sunday. It's not the true Sabbath day, because if you think Sabbath is Saturday, like in Spanish, it sounds like Sábado. That was the original Sabbath. That's the OG Sabbath. But I think a few hundred years ago, or an emperor changed it, Constantine or something. I don't know all the history, but I think that's who changed it. Okay, so those are the first four. And we get a big transition when we move on to the fifth one. So we go from how we relate to God with how we relate to each other. So that's where we see a big shift to in the commandment five. And these are a lot shorter. These are a lot easier to get through. In verse 16, it says, "Honor your father and your mother, as the Lord your God has commanded you." so that you may live long and that it may go well for you in the land of the Lord your God is giving you. Okay. So that's obvious. I mean, so we come from God, but he's given us life through the vessels of our parents. So that's I can see the importance of that. And I think a lot of that is lacking nowadays. A lot of the political motivations in modern times, I think, can be boiled down to, you know, just saying, you know, swearing against our parents, like especially the fathers. So going against the father, I think you can boil down a lot of the motivations for a lot of political perversions in modern times. And anytime I see, like, I see a movie, like anytime I see a movie where an adolescent or a young adult is being violent or disrespectful to his dad, that really affects me. I remember one time when I was a child, I got mad at my dad. I think I was like 4 or 5. I was really little. And I told him I hated him because he didn't let me do something. I don't remember even what it was, but I told him I hated him. And then I went to my room, and I was it just hurt me a lot to say that to him. And so I ran back to him, kind of like prodigal son, like on a smaller scale. And I told him I was sorry, and it was all fine after that. But yeah, whenever I see, I know there's some bad parents out there that aren't doing the best things to their children, or maybe doing horrible, evil things. But that wasn't my situation, and so anytime I see that, where it looks like a parent is getting undisturbed abuse, it really affects me. So I imagine it has maybe a similar effect on God if we act like that towards God, the ultimate Father. So there's that one, and then we've got a real easy one. Pretty much most people agree with this. Thou shalt not murder. Okay. You shall not commit murder. And that's really cloudy today because there's a lot of instances of people getting killed and people celebrate it. There's some instances of murder that are disguised as choice. It's like, oh, this is choice. This isn't killing. This is choice. So I think it's really important to realize that just killing is bad. I mean, so maybe you might have to defend yourself, like as a country, as a soldier in war. Maybe if somebody's attacking you, you might have to defend yourself, and somebody dies as a result. But I think it's better to avoid murder. In any case, we can. That's a pretty easy one, I think. It's pretty simple. Right, and then we get to a pretty big one that obviously is not respected nowadays. Number 7, do not commit adultery. Okay. So how am I doing on time? Am I rambling on too? Oh, man, it's already almost 11:30. Shoot. Okay. Okay. So I'll try to get through the rest of them. But adultery, so this is a huge one, but nowadays it's a lot of people like it. Even like the most elite writers in modern discourse, the New York Times. You'll see a lot of articles about should you cheat on your spouse or should you have an open relationship? Should you all kinds of things that are very much promoting adultery, I think. If you take it just back to the ancients, it was obviously important for men because women, the advantage a woman had, they didn't have many advantages, but one big advantage they had back then in ancient times is that if they had a child, they knew it was theirs. Okay, the woman knew she was the mother of her own child. Okay, it was inside her. But if she was going with other men, a man couldn't really know if this was really his child or not, at least biologically. He wouldn't know, okay, if there was any hint of infidelity going on. So obviously that was an important thing. And so I think we need to bring that back, make adultery bad again. Make it a bad thing, make it evil. Just like it was, I think it's just as relevant today. And with adultery, we see where you basically take away the choice from a child to be able to honor their father and mother. Like you take that away from them if you engage in adultery as a man or a woman. Because obviously, I've seen a lot of that in my own family, adultery where families get broken up. A child outside of the marriage, I've got cousins my age that I've never met because of stuff like that. So it's really sad, and the children suffer, the family suffers, community suffers, especially when you take it to scale in society. It's quite destructive, and we see a lot of that in violence, young adults, people getting addicted to drugs, going to jail, committing murder. A lot of that can be derived from broken families and the trauma it causes. All right, we got two other ones that are pretty easy, pretty quick. Don't steal. Okay, don't take what's not yours. And also, don't bear false witness. So basically, don't lie. And then the last one is coveting. So don't covet, don't desire what your neighbor has. So if you feel like, somebody has something that you don't, that you'd like to have, don't be angry about not having it. When I grew up, I had one of my best friends is his wealthy family, and he became very successful in business. And I was guilty of envying that friend, even though I considered him one of my best friends. I used to get angry that he had so much more money than I did, and he does now. But I kind of learned over the years, especially as I became a Christian, a disciple, I learned to celebrate the fact that my friend was successful, and then as well as other people out there, other people like the richest people on earth. Like I want to celebrate their success. I don't want to celebrate everything they do, because obviously they don't do everything right. But I do want to celebrate the right stuff they're doing, like their success. I think it's pretty incredible. So I think coveting can lead to some of the other stuff. So the coveting, obviously, it can lead to the adultery, to the murder, to the lying, to the stealing, and ultimately to not following the first four, right? The first four commandments. And we bring that to the second greatest commandment. So those other six about how we relate to each other, Christ goes on back, if we go back to Matthew Chapter 22:37. He doesn't just stop at that by loving God above all. So after he says, love God above all, with all your heart, all your mind, he says that's the greatest commandment. And then he goes on in the next verse and says, love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Okay. So it's like, well, those six commandments doesn't say love your neighbor as yourself. Well, we have kind of like with the first one, love your God, you have no other gods. We see that shortly after that, love the God above all in Deuteronomy 6:5. In Leviticus, in chapter 19, verse 18, It says, love your neighbor as yourself. So we do have it, and it makes sense, and it's probably where Jesus is citing it from, because a lot of his, he's quoting the Old Testament in a lot of places. So 1918. Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against one of your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. So keep my decrees. Okay. Another one I like is a few verses before it says, don't curse deaf people. It's like, my son's deaf, so I'll get that one. So I like going through these, and I think it's good that they've started putting these in the school. Like, we see these out of the book of Deuteronomy, I mean, also Exodus, but a lot of our founding literature around the founding, like for the 45 years surrounding the founding of the country, a lot of them are quoting the book of Deuteronomy. Okay? So it's not really in our, like, it's not in our Constitution a direct quote from the Bible, but a lot of people writing and giving rise to those documents of our country are taking those from the Bible, from this book, Deuteronomy. And especially having the Ten Commandments in schools, I think that's a great thing. There's a lot more relevance to these rules and how they've been around for thousands of years than some of the other stuff they're teaching. And there's nowhere also in our documents that say that there's a separation of church and state. That was just in a letter of someone wrote something. I don't know all the history, but that's just in a letter, like one letter. It's not in any of the Constitution or anything like that, but there's limitations on the church especially, but there's no separation of itself. All right, well, I've gone a little bit over, so thank y'all for listening to me, and I think it's good to go back to basic every once in a while. And one thing I'll end with is that we see a lot of death as the penalty for violating a lot of these, but then we also have, thank God, thank that he sent his son to die for us. And we see many examples like the adulterous woman in John chapter 8, where he said they were going to stone her to death. He said, sin no more, you're forgiven. As well as, you know, the prodigal son example he cites, that's obviously the father forgiving his son for not honoring him. So thank God we have forgiveness. Because I think I would have been dead a long time ago if we didn't have that, right? Right. Thank you, Church. Let's be standing.